Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Justice Kennedy Retirement Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Kristen Voorhees. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for a press briefing on the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. We will hear from several civil rights leaders on what's at stake in the wake of his retirement and the importance of opposing any nominee who will not be an independent and fair-minded justice. Now it is my pleasure to turn the call over to Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Vinita?
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining this call. I'm Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations working to build an America as good as its ideals. The Supreme Court serves as the last line of defense for civil and human rights, and the legacy of its rulings endure for generations. Today, Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement after serving on the bench for three decades. During his tenure, he was the decisive fifth vote in several landmark cases on issues like marriage equality, criminal justice, and women's health care. And his successor will profoundly affect the future of American jurisprudence and of people in this country. However, by the McConnell standard, no Supreme Court nominee should be considered until after the people have spoken in the November elections and a new Congress is seated in January 2019. Given the perilous times we're in, the stakes are especially high for filling this vacancy. Since taking office, President Trump has led a relentless crusade against our nation's progress to recognize fundamental civil and human rights. And as we've seen in just the last month, an extreme Supreme Court can have devastating consequences for all people in America, from limiting the ability to vote, to endorsing religious persecution, to undercutting the rights of working people. And when ideology masquerades as constitutional law, everyone in America suffers. President Trump has time and again demonstrated his hostility to civil and human rights. And far from the fair-minded jurists that our independent judiciary demands, Trump has nominated extremist culture warriors with offensive records to district and circuit courts across the country. And his Supreme Court shortlist is full of individuals with reputations and well-established records of bias against women, the LGBTQ community, people of color, immigrants, environmental protections, and access to health care. Now, Justice Neil Gorsuch was plucked from this list more than 1 year ago, and his opinions provide ample evidence that we should believe Trump when he says that his nominees have passed his devastating litmus test. It's clear that President Trump has no regard for the rule of law or democratic traditions, and he brazenly flouts the Constitution, demands loyalty from his officials, from judges, from the American people. He's been ridiculing the free press and denigrating individual judges and actively undermining our institutions. And the responsibility now falls to the Senate to preserve the integrity of the Supreme Court. All senators need to put country over party and use all the tools available to them to stop President Trump's plan to take over the Supreme Court for the next 40 years. No one should be considered for the Supreme Court until the people have a say in November. Thank you.
Thank you, Vinita. Now we hear from Sherilyn Erfel, President and Director Counsel, NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund.
Thank you. I'm Sherilyn Erfel. I head the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, which is an entirely separate organization from the NAACP and has been since 1957. The Legal Defense Fund was founded by Thurgood Marshall, the trailblazing civil rights lawyer of the 20th century, who later became the first African-American justice to sit on the United States Supreme Court. A core part of our work over the 78 years that the Legal Defense Fund has been in existence has been before the United States Supreme Court. We have appeared before the court in years when the court seemed inclined towards protecting and upholding equal rights and racial justice, and we have appeared before the court in times when there was a much more conservative bent to the court. And so we recognize how important the court is in articulating and defining the rule of law and articulating and defining the parameters of citizenship, justice, equality, and opportunity in this country. And for those reasons, we recognize that this is a monumental moment for our country. We believe that the very integrity of our justice system and the rule of law will be affected by how this seat is managed. I do want to be sure to recognize Justice Anthony Kennedy for his 30 years of service on the Supreme Court. He has been an important moderating force on a whole variety of issues, and he's to be commended for the length of his service. This term, in fact, this week, has reminded us about the importance of the Supreme Court and how very narrowly decided decisions by the court can affect millions of people. We saw this term in the court's decision to allow the Ohio purge system to go forward in the Husted versus A. Philip Randolph case. We saw it today in the case involving public sector unions. We saw it this week in the Muslim ban case. But I want to remind us that there have been other terms when it was Justice Kennedy's voice that produced a narrow victory in support of equality, access, and dignity for all Americans. I would remind us of the 2015 term when the Obergefell decision was decided, and it was Justice Kennedy's voice writing for the majority that spoke about the dignity of same-sex couples and the importance of extending marriage equality to same-sex couples. I'm reminded of that same term, the Fair Housing Act case, in which many people expected that the court would strike down the disparate impact standard for assessing fair housing cases. And it was Justice Kennedy's voice, once again, upholding disparate impact, shocking many people in the Supreme Court that day, and recognizing the ongoing significance and importance of the Fair Housing Act in addressing racial segregation in our country. It was Justice Kennedy's voice in the 4-3 support of affirmative action in the second Fisher case in 2016, another case in which many people believed that affirmative action was on the chopping block. But it was Justice Kennedy's moderating voice that saved the day. If we just think about those three cases, marriage equality, fair housing, affirmative action, we recognize what lies in the balance with this open seat. Unfortunately, the President of the United States, President Trump, has revealed to us what he looks for and what he believes are the qualifications of judges to sit on the federal courts. We've seen his lower court nominees. We've seen four of them in all refuse to endorse the universally accepted view that Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided. We've seen him advance nominees who lack the experience and the competence to sit on the federal court. We've seen him advance nominees whose background demonstrates that they stand in opposition to racial equality and justice. We've seen his one nominee confirmed to the Supreme Court, Justice Gorsuch, who's revealed himself to have extreme right-wing positions, even to the right of Justice Scalia, the justice that he replaced. And so for this reason, we recognize that this is a moment of monumental significance, that what happens with this seat will affect the future of this country. It will affect the rule of law, the meaning of equality, the meaning of justice, access, and opportunity, certainly for the people that we represent at the Legal Defense Fund, but for the entire country. And for that reason, it is critical that Congress do its job. The first thing Congress must do is refuse to review any nominee before January. We are only months away from a midterm election at a moment in this country in which this country is more fractured than it has been in generations, in which the President of the United States himself is subject to ongoing investigations and lawsuits involving a range of issues, in which we have not yet addressed the issue of foreign interference in our election system. This is a moment that is perilous for this country. This is not the moment for Congress to allow Mitch McConnell to shove through a nomination of nominee of President Trump's choosing without the American people having an opportunity to speak in the election that is upcoming. And when the Congress does take up the nominee, whether they take it up before the election or whether they take it up in January, they must stand strong, Republicans and Democrats, and refuse to pass through any nominee whose record does not reveal their commitment to the principles of equal justice under law. Any nominee who cannot demonstrate in their record that they are committed to the America that was created after Brown versus Board of Education, the America of which we are all proud, the America that stands for principles of justice, equality, and access. Any nominee whose record does not reflect that they stand for those principles must be rejected by Congress. And so this moment today is a critically important one. It is one that affects every American. This is not a Beltway issue. This is not a Washington, D.C. issue. This is not a national organization issue. This is an issue that affects every American and the future that we want for our country, for our children and our grandchildren. At the Legal Defense Fund, we will be vigilant in this process. We know what is at stake, and we intend to use our influence to educate Americans about what is at stake and to ensure that we protect the sacred nature of the United States Supreme Court, which has the extraordinary power to say what the law is in this democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherilyn. Now we'll hear from Nan Aaron, President of Alliance for Justice. Nan, are you there? Okay, moving along, we'll now hear from Fatima Goss Graves, President and CEO of the National Women's Law Center.
Thank you. I'm Fatima Goss Graves, and I'm President and CEO of the National Women's Law Center. And for 45 years, the Law Center has fought to protect and defend the rights of women and girls in every aspect of their lives, including in our practice before the court. And with Justice Kennedy's retirement, the stakes have never been higher for women. The justice has been a key swing vote on this court at key times, voting to uphold our most critical rights and protections affecting women's rights at work, protections in school, access to health care, including the constitutional right to abortion care. And if there is one thing we have learned from this president, he has taken his follow-up on his extremist promises quite seriously. So we at the National Women's Law Center take his promise to only appoint justices who will overturn Roe versus Wade and only appoint justices who will dismantle the Affordable Care Act very, very seriously. And when he assures us and assures us repeatedly that he will fulfill those promises, we believe them. So we've seen it in his effort to pass the lower court with extremists who are committed to allowing, for example, religious beliefs to override individual rights. And if this last week has taught us anything, the court matters to people's lives. It matters for our democracy. It matters for the rule of law. And if a Trump nominee is confirmed, we know that it will, for a generation, shift the balance of the courts against the constitutional right to abortion in particular. This process, the process that he has named as the one that he will be using to select a nominee, was tainted from the beginning. From the promises he made to having a list that has a clear litmus test to even be on it, especially around reproductive health care. So we strongly believe we need to put this whole thing on pause. The Senate should not consider any nominee from that list under these conditions. It's time to fight for our rights and for the future of our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Fatima. Now we hear from Thomas Sines, President and General Counsel of Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund.
Thank you. This is Thomas Sines, President and General Counsel of MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, a now 50-year-old national legal organization whose mission is to promote the civil rights of all Latinos living in the United States. At 18% of the population, Latinos are and have been for over a decade the largest minority group in the United States. And that is not going to change despite Donald Trump's efforts to severely undercount Latinos in Census 2020. To drive Latinos with connections to immigrants out of the country through policy and rhetoric, or to minimize our participation in government through an unprecedentedly low level of Latino appointments to positions on the bench or in the administration. We are and will be a growing part of the American community. As such, we are very concerned about what happens at the Supreme Court, because increasingly, Latinos will be at the center of cases that come before the U.S. Supreme Court, whether those relate to education equity, voting rights, or the rights of immigrants. Any confirmation of a Supreme Court justice is a matter of extreme importance. You can understand why the Latino community faces this particular confirmation with some trepidation. The nomination will be put forward by a president whose ongoing rhetoric demonstrates that he holds a deeply felt animosity, hostility toward the Latino community. But the Latino community knows, and we are confident that the rest of the American public knows, that the Supreme Court is no place for extremists. The Supreme Court is no place for extremists from either side of the political spectrum. Indeed, the Constitution puts in place protections to ensure that extremists do not end up on our U.S. Supreme Court. Those protections have not always worked. But among them are the following. The Senate has a constitutional obligation to provide advice and consent to the president on his nomination. In addition, the Supreme Court nominations that have gone to the court have generally been confirmed with supermajority greater than 60 votes in the United States Senate. These are some of the protections that need to be followed. Unfortunately, the current United States Senate has demonstrated its inability to advise this president on his nomination. Instead, they have mindlessly consented to too many lower court nominees who have history of extreme bias and indeed misconduct directed towards some of the most vulnerable people in the American population. It is therefore appropriate and expected that we should wait and see if this Senate's record of mindlessly consenting is what the American people want. If they do, they will surely return a United States Senate in 2019 that reflects the Senate we have today. If the American people, by contrast, want a Senate that understands its constitutional duty to advise and consent and will vigorously vet and consider any nomination to ensure that no extremist ends up on the Supreme Court, then surely the elections in November 2018 will return a different United States Senate in 2019. The Latino community and others throughout the country expect that the United States Senate will engage in that vigorous duty. And the first part of that duty is to wait and see what happens in November when the people have the opportunity to return a verdict on what the Senate's role, appropriate role, should be in ensuring that no Trumpian extremist ends up on the United States Supreme Court. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Now we'll hear from Jody Winterhoff, Senior Vice President for Policy and Political Affairs of the Human Rights Campaign.
Good afternoon. This is Jody Winterhoff with the Human Rights Campaign, the largest civil rights organization for LGBTQ people in the country. And we share the statement representing our over 3 million members and supporters across the country. Today, with the retirement of Justice Kennedy, our most fundamental rights are on the line. One thing is clear, the American people deserve a say in this most crucial of moments for our democracy. HRC is calling on Senate leadership to allow the American people to decide at the ballot box whether they want a nominee who will undermine their fundamental rights and freedoms or one who will protect them. Donald Trump has been clear. He wants a Supreme Court nominee who will undermine the progress we've made on affordable health care, LGBTQ equality, reproductive rights. The American people don't, and they should have an opportunity to say so at the ballot box in November. While Justice Kennedy was far from perfect, he cast countless tie-breaking votes on major decisions and authored the majority opinion in the four most influential cases affecting LGBTQ people in the past three decades, like Romer v. Evans, Lawrence v. Texas, U.S. v. Windsor, and Obergefell v. Hodges. But there is so much more at stake. The Supreme Court will be asked to weigh in on many issues, from the trans troop ban to LGBTQ employment rights. Where we stand is we will not go back, and we will stand firm in what we see as a bright future for this country with those rights and protections in place.
Thank you, Jody. Next, we'll hear from Michael Keegan, President and CEO of People for the American Way.
Thank you. Justice Kennedy has played a historic role, not just in vindicating the rights of same-sex couples to be treated like everyone else, but also in holding back some of the worst excesses of the Roberts Court. on key issues like reproductive choice and civil rights, his vote prevented the four most extreme members of the court from doing even more damage than they would have done otherwise. And I think we've also seen that Donald Trump has made it perfectly clear who he'd like to nominate, someone in the mold of Neil Gorsuch. Gorsuch is a judge that has demonstrated his hostility to working people, to women's reproductive rights, to the environment, to people of color, to the LGBT community, and certainly to the right to vote. His votes have made clear that all of our fears about his confirmation were all very well founded, not the least of all his willingness to be a rubber stamp for some of the president's worst excesses, including his shameful, very un-American Muslim ban. And every single nominee on Donald Trump's shortlist has been vetted to ensure that they'll carry out the right's extreme agenda on choice, on health care, on marriage equality, on corporate power, and a host of other issues. The Senate can't allow Donald Trump to install another narrow-minded elitist to a lifetime seat on the federal bench. Make no mistake, rulings on choice, marriage equality, the Affordable Care Act, and a host of other decisions which Americans have come to rely on are at risk. Anyone who thinks that the Supreme Court, with the addition of another justice in the mold of Neil Gorsuch, won't toss aside precedent in Roe or in marriage equality should take a very hard look at today's decision in Janus. And we're going to fight hard to demand that the Senate defend our rights, and that doesn't just extend to Democrats. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski can't tell themselves that they are pro-choice and confirm a judge who will overturn Roe. And Rob Portman can't pretend he cares about marriage equality and support a judge who will strip the rights away from gay people. Dean Heller can't play a moderate and then vote in favor of a nominee who will radically reshape our democracy. And to be clear, no nominee should receive a vote until after a new Senate is sworn in. We're going on the offense, and we're going all in to fight hard. This is a decision that was going to shape our country for generations, and we intend to act like it. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Finally, we'll hear from Rachel Timmon, CEO of Lambda Legal.
Thank you so much. Lambda Legal is the flagship LGBT legal group in America. We are the lawyers to the LGBT community. We brought Romer versus Evans, which was Justice Kennedy's first LGBT ruling, and we brought Lawrence versus Texas, in which his opinion overturned the sodomy laws and decriminalized LGBT lives, paving the way for marriage equality. And so today was really bittersweet, right? Justice Kennedy is the first justice who sounded like he'd actually met a gay person. But to end his career by hedging on his legacy in the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision, which really opens the door to endless litigation that is designed to chip away at LGBT equality, and to express in that decision such concern for the Colorado Human Rights Commissioner's comments that he found demeaning to religion while utterly ignoring the President of the United States' vulgar attack on an entire religion and in voting to uphold the Muslim ban was just a very bitter way to end a career that recognized the civil liberties of LGBT people so beautifully. And we are, of course, grateful to him, but very, very disturbed to have it end on that note. And by the McConnell standard, the people need a voice in who our next Supreme Court justice is, and there should be no hearings until after the election so that they can have that voice.
Thank you. We'll now open it up to questions. For reporters, I would ask that you please note if your question is directed to a specific speaker. Operator, if you could please provide instructions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. And we will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. We appreciate your patience, and we will take our first question momentarily. And we will go ahead and take our first question from Ben Wehrmund with Politico. Your line is now open.
Hey, thank you. I know there are a lot of issues that you've covered here and that you're concerned about, but I'm specifically interested in affirmative action and what this retirement could mean for that, given that, as you have said, Kennedy was a deciding swing vote in the UT Austin Fisher case. I guess this question would be directed at Sherilyn Ifill, though anybody who wants to take it, feel free.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and precisely is the kind of case that demonstrates how important Justice Kennedy's voice could be. In particular, you know, there has been a relentless attempt to dismantle affirmative action from those most opposed to it, many of them led by Ed Blum, one individual for whom this is a lifetime obsession. And no matter how many times the Supreme Court speaks to this issue, they continue to bring litigation to try to chip away at affirmative action. And it was Justice Kennedy who really stood the line in both Fisher 1 and Fisher 2 to ensure that universities could express their compelling interest in diversity in education through very narrowly tailored race-conscious affirmative action programs. It's hard for me to imagine a justice that would be nominated by this president who would take the position that Justice Kennedy took. And it's easy for me to imagine the Supreme Court, despite the fact that they just ruled on this issue in 2016, it's easy for me to imagine them taking up another one of these cases. I think it's instructive to read Justice Kagan's dissent in the Janus decision today, in which she talks essentially about the raw power being exhibited by the conservative justices on the court. And so I would have no difficulty expecting this court to take up an issue that it has decided quite definitively through Fisher 1 and Fisher 2 just a few years ago. It's a question of tremendous peril, a question of tremendous importance. And if you read Justice Kennedy's opinion in Fisher 2, it's clear that he understands the ongoing need for measures that allow for diversity and that bring us together in a space where Americans can learn about each other and learn together. I don't expect any Trump nominee to share that view.
And this is Benita. I'd just like to add that we know that Ed Blum is continuing his crusade and vendetta against affirmative action and using the Justice Department in this moment to tee up what looks like to be another possible challenge in the Harvard case. And so these are issues that are playing themselves out in real time. And that is why we say that everything is literally at stake when it comes to civil and human rights for all people in this country.
Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone, and we will pause again to allow questions to queue. And we will take our next question from Lauren Wolf with Foreign Policy Magazine. Your line is now open.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for this briefing. I am wondering if any of you want to give your thoughts on how likely it is that one of these nominees is going to sail through Congress and what efforts are being done to sort of lobby against it.
So this is Anita. I'll get us started, but I don't know if you heard the speakers, but all of the speakers have been aligned in saying that the Senate should not consider any nominee until after the November election. This is the standard that was set by Senator McConnell in the final year of the Obama administration. It is a standard that should be consistently applied here. It is one that it appears to be the line that the Democratic leadership is also expressing. And so I think the bottom line here is that there should be no consideration of a nominee until there's a new Senate seated in January of 2019.
Right. I understand you're all saying it shouldn't. I'm asking more how likely you think it is.
Yeah, this is Sherilyn Eiffel from the Legal Defense Fund. I actually think that that, you know, Americans are seeing this moment in a way that they could not have a year or two ago. I think the last 10 days alone, when we have seen what is at stake in this country and the erosion of our norms and principles, has awakened people in this country who perhaps had not understood the very perilous moment that we're in. And so I feel quite confident that when Americans recognize and realize what the effect of this seat can and will be, I really believe that they will insist that their members of Congress do what they have to do, which is to protect our democracy at this moment. I think they want a voice. I think we're seeing millions of Americans insist that their voice be heard in places all over this country. I don't think there could be a better moment for the chances that this will not go through before November, because I think people are conscious in ways that they were not conscious months ago and have been activated and have been outraged in ways that they were not months ago. And they recognize that if we are going to protect our democracy, it's going to require every American to take a stand and to decide what are the principles we want to fight for. So I actually feel quite confident that we have the ability, we have the power, we have the message, and all it's going to take is for Americans to stand up and deliver that message to their representatives, and the courage of our United States Congress, not just the Democrats. We're talking about 49 Democrats and a Republican. We're talking about the courage of people who should be able to recognize the moment that we're in and their constitutional authority under Article 3 to provide advice and consent. That is not, it doesn't say anything about a rubber stamp. And I think that the United States Congress at this moment in this country can and must stand up. It won't be all of them, but the Senate, it can be enough of them to ensure that this seat is filled by someone who holds the principles of this country and the rule of law as an ideal.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone, and we will pause again. It appears that we have no further questions at this time, so I will turn the call back to our speakers.
Thank you for everybody who joined. And thank you to our speakers, and we appreciate you taking the time.